Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Please be seated. We are here in the matter of Carter versus State. It is case number 59392. Ms. Connolly, on behalf of the appellant, are you ready to proceed? Please.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Karen Connolly and I represent Christopher Carter. Christopher Carter was convicted after a jury trial of approximately 21 counts, 8 counts of burglary while in use of a deadly weapon, and 12 counts of robbery while in use of a deadly weapon. At the conclusion of that trial, before the commencement of a second trial, which was to proceed on similar issues, he pled guilty to 4 counts, 2 counts of robbery while in possession of a deadly weapon, possession of a firearm by an ex-felon, and 1 count of burglary. The pivotal issue in this case before us today is whether or not the statements made by Christopher Carter as a matter of constitutional law, whether or not they were sufficient to invoke his right to counsel. The district court made the factual determination that the statement that was made by Christopher Carter while en route to the robbery office in the police car was, "Can I have an attorney?" or "Can I have a lawyer?" excuse me. The district court made the determination that that statement was ambiguous, that it was not an unequivocal request for counsel. The district court erred as a matter of law. As a matter of federal constitutional law, the statement, "Can I have an attorney?" has been determined to be unambiguous and unequivocal. Given that fact, all questioning should have ceased and the court should have, in fact, granted the motion to suppress. The facts are as follows. Mr. Carter was arrested at the home that he occupied with his brother and his mother. His brother and mother were placed in flexi-cuff and he was taken into a police vehicle. Once in a police vehicle, according to the detective who testified at the evidentiary hearing, he was Mirandized, and after he was Mirandized, he made the statement, "Can I have an attorney?" At that point in time, under federal constitutional law, and specifically the case of Smith versus Endel, 860 Fed Second, 1528, it was incumbent upon the police detectives to stop all questioning. They didn't do that. Rather, what the police officer indicated was as follows. He stated to the defendant, and I'm quoting from the Record on Appeal, page 62, after my client indicated, "Can I have an attorney?" the detective stated as follows. "Actually, we stopped at that point and said, we can talk about that and we'll get into it more detail as we get into the crime, more into the crime when we get to the robbery office." That was his testimony at the evidentiary hearing. So he admitted that when Mr. Carter said, "Can I have an attorney?" there was further discussion. At that point, based upon Smith versus Endel and also the case of United States versus Nejbauer, and excuse my pronunciation, Nejbauer, in that particular case, the request that was made by the defendant was, "Would it be possible to speak with an attorney?" The District Court of Arizona found in that particular case that that, again, was an unequivocal request for counsel. So as a matter of federal constitutional law, looking at the case of United States versus Nejbauer and also Smith versus Endel, the court should have found that my client unequivocally requested counsel and there should have been no further questioning. In light of that fact, in accordance with the Edwards Supreme Court case, the motion to suppress should have been granted. The motion to suppress was not granted. Based upon those facts and circumstances, I'm asking this court to reverse the underlying conviction. The error was not harmless. In this particular case, the majority of the meat and potatoes of the state's case was the statements that were made by the defendant. After he was Mirandized in the vehicle, and after he said, "Can I have an attorney?" there was some further discussion in the police vehicle. The discussion essentially pertained to my client having concern about his brother because his brother was handcuffed and his mother was handcuffed. And in fact, if you look at the voluntary statement, and it's a Record on Appeal, page 47, it's indicative of the fact that in the police car there was discussions about what would happen to his family, particularly his brother, if he didn't agree to speak. So there was this discussion in the police vehicle after my client had unambiguously invoked his right to counsel. And the purpose of that discussion was essentially to soften him up, to get him to reconsider his request for counsel. And that's not disputed. The police officer at the evidentiary hearing essentially did not dispute that there was some discussion in the car about what would happen to his family if he was not willing to talk with the police detectives. And in fact, on Record on Appeal, page 43, it was set forth in the state's opposition that the detective admitted that later on in the drive, the Detective Martin stated that defendant doesn't talk, we won't know if your brother is involved. That's impermissible. That's impermissible questioning under the federal authorities I cited to court. Again, the error was not harmless. The error was not harmless because we look at what other evidence did they have. The other evidence they had was there had been some garbage bags, which takes me to the next issue. There was some garbage bags that were placed outside my client's apartment, which were picked up by the police in this particular case. Police came by one day and picked up a garbage bag, and then they came by the next day and picked up another garbage bag. In that garbage bag, they found, the first garbage bag, a T-shirt which had essentially two holes cut out of it. They came back the next day, and they got another garbage bag, which I had some paperwork from my client identifying him as residing in a particular apartment. That was the only evidence they had in addition to my client's statement. So when we were looking at what was the effect of the district court's error in not granting the motion to suppress, I would submit that, but for my client's statement, there would not have been sufficient evidence to support conviction in this particular case. My client was, when he subsequently got to the robbery office, and he was concerned that if he didn't speak with the detectives that his brother would be arrested, he was Mirandized again, and he agreed to waive his rights. Now, the fact that he was Mirandized again does not overcome the error in the first place, which was that when he said, can I have a lawyer, there should be no questioning. Everything should be stopped. And if there was any question about whether or not that first statement by him was ambiguous, any subsequent questioning should have only been by way of clarification, regarding what was his intent. And I'm not suggesting that can I have a lawyer is ambiguous. It's our position, it's my position that it's unambiguous. However, when he got the robbery office, and it's reflected on the record, his main concern was that his brother would be arrested. His brother, the police detective at the evidentiary hearing, admitted was a suspect. There was discussion in the vehicle about perhaps his brother would be arrested. The police detective said that there was belief that there was another person involved. After my client spoke and made a statement after he was Mirandized the second time and his brother was not subsequently arrested. Regarding the garbage bags, the testimony was...
Counsel, let me ask you this. Could the, assuming that the court agreed with your evaluation of the statements given in the police car, what's wrong with the admissibility of the statements given after he's re-Mirandized at the police station?
Well,
aren't those statements the more incriminating?
Well, under the law, once he said, can I have a lawyer, they can't further question him. Everything has to stop. And the federal case law talks about we can't use a subsequent waiver. That's not sufficient to overcome the error in the first place. When he said, can I have a lawyer, there should be no further questioning. And it's not legally, from a legal perspective, the fact that he subsequently waived after some discussion that his brother would be arrested, that does not cure the initial defect. And that is also established in federal law. And the detective, if he had any ambiguity, the questioning should have been clarifying. It wasn't clarifying. And again, the question becomes, would an objective person in that detective's position have believed that my client was invoking his right to counsel? And if you look at it in context, he was just Mirandized.
Again, suppose we concede that point. Do you have a case that says that where the defendant is subsequently Mirandized, after having invoked his right to counsel, and then chooses to speak, that doesn't constitute a waiver?
We get into the issue of, I think we're getting to the issue of and I guess under the Edwards case, if he invokes his right, all questioning has to stop. Any discussion has to stop. And anything that happens after that point, unless it's initiated by the defendant, it doesn't come in. Now, the subsequent questioning was not initiated by the defendant. It was initiated by the police in this particular case. If the court concedes that he waived, and then some point later he changes his mind and said, I want to speak with counsel, that's different, or I want to speak with the police, that's different to the police continuing to talk to him and basically convincing him to waive his rights, which is what happened in this particular case. So under the Edwards case, which is a Supreme Court case, it's a bright line rule. If he invokes discussions, questioning has to stop. And that's not what happened in this particular case.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if these Edwards or subsequent cases say that the cops can't walk up to the defendant and give him a Miranda warning.
Your Honor, I have a problem hearing. I'm hard of hearing.
I apologize. I'll speak up. I'm not so sure that those cases preclude the police from walking up to the defendant and giving him a Miranda warning when he gets to the police station or as part of the booking process. And then if he chooses to start talking again, it seems like the waiver occurs.
If he had started talking on his own volition, if he had changed
his mind. What was the sequence here? What was the sequence?
No, the sequence.
Once they got to the police station.
You have 5 minutes left.
I would reserve that for rebuttal if I could.
I'll certainly give you time to answer Justice Hardesty's question without affecting your 5 minutes, if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. In this particular case, there was discussion in the police vehicle about, as I indicated previously, arresting his brother. Right. What would happen if you don't talk? If you don't talk, well, that's fine, but we're going to arrest your brother. That was, as I indicated, softening him up, trying to get him to reconsider his position. That's prohibited. That's strictly prohibited under federal law, under the United States Supreme Court. If they had said nothing, if they hadn't said anything to him, he just got to the police station, decided, you know what, I'm changing my mind, I'd like to talk to you, and then they memorized him. That's not what happened in this particular case. And I would agree with you that that had been the factual scenario in this case, then he would have waived. But that's not what happened in this case. The discussion they had is for encouraging him to waive his rights, and that discussion should never have taken place.
Thank you.
And Ms. Clerk, on rebuttal, we'll give Ms. Conley the entire 5 minutes. On behalf of the state.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good afternoon, Counsel. First of all, I think I would say a few points in clarification. Appellant's assertion that there was some discussion in the car that what happened here, as Ms. Connolly has said, is that defendant was taken into the car, and the detective at the suppression hearing said that he Mirandized. There was some disagreement as to whether he was Mirandized in this first instance or not. And in fact, the defense counsel at the suppression hearing challenged whether he was in fact Mirandized, attempting to introduce the testimony of another detective who was in the car to say that perhaps he was not Mirandized. Regardless, the detective stated that he was Mirandized. There were some preliminary identifying questions that were asked. At some point during the transport, Mr. Carter said something to the effect of, "Should I have an attorney?" That is what the detective remembered from the conversation. When challenged on cross-examination, he said, "I don't have an exact recollection of what was said, and it's possible that he said, can I have an attorney?"
Then the state concedes correctly that, and I'm quoting from page 50 of the transcript, there's no question from the statements that nobody is disputing he made, can I have a lawyer, may I have a lawyer, can I have a lawyer? So I agree with you that Detective Martin's testimony was much more equivocal than that, but then the state effectively concedes what had been written in its opposition to the motion to suppress and says, we'll accept for purposes of argument, can I have a lawyer?
Correct.
Isn't that fair?
Correct. And the district court did accept that, as Ms. Connolly stated, as the finding of the
here.
Court. I'm only flushing that out a little bit because I think that is the factual finding of the court below, but I think it adds to the totality of the circumstances looking at what followed, which was the detective's statement, okay, let's just talk about this when we get to the office. And if you look at it in the universe of the interrogation, nothing else happened. So the defendant said, can I have an attorney? The detective said, let's talk about that when we get to the office. No further questioning, no further inquiry occurred after that point. And that was
did the subject arise of his brother, before or after the statement, can I have a lawyer?
That is unclear in the testimony. There was some, And certainly, this is another point I would like to refute. There was absolutely no testimony that the detective said, you better talk or we're throwing your brother in jail. According to the detective, because there had been so many robberies, and some of them perhaps implicated a getaway vehicle, and so it was initially thought that perhaps the brother was driving the getaway vehicle. So the thought was perhaps at that point the brother was involved. But there was never any statement, and the detective never testified that he said, you better talk when we get back to the office, or else your brother is going to jail and your mother's going to jail.
Are we mincing words about a threatening-like statement, or was there conversation in the car about the brother's likely or impending arrest?
No, there was no conversation about the brother's impending arrest. There was conversation about the brother's possible involvement in the criminal activity.
So that is consistent with what the petitioner in this case is suggesting, that the conversation regarding the defendant's guilt may have been step one, but step two may have been this concern that he had about his brother, which then caused him to talk.
It's possible, and I think that the record can be construed. The record is ambiguous because this conversation, of course, is what we do not have on tape. We do not have a record of this conversation. So we're kind of making inferences based on the detective's possible recollection of what happened. And he was willing to concede during the testimony at various points that he doesn't have an excellent recollection as to some point. He knows that there was some discussion about the brother, and that is reflected in the taped statement, because he says, you know, a couple things that we wanted to talk about that we talked about in the car. Number one, you voiced some concern about possibly having an attorney. And the defendant says, yes, I was concerned. And then there's some discussion about the brother.
Taking the inference out of it, the police's interest in the brother was expressed in the car ride. We just don't know whether it was before or after the argued invocation. Fair enough?
Correct. I would agree with that.
Okay.
Yes. The other thing I would note is that, unfortunately, in the appellate record, we do not have the entire statement. We have an 111-page statement that the detective later at trial testified was stunning in the defendant's forthcoming nature as to his participation in some crimes and his lack of participation in other crimes. And I think if the entire statement had been included in the record, you would see that this idea that somehow he was coerced because, you know, he was worried that his brother would be thrown in jail for some of these possible robberies. Well, he goes and he says, I did the KB Toys. No, I didn't do the Wendy's. You know, I didn't do that when I did this one. And so if he was so concerned about his brother's possible participation and possible incarceration, he would have said, I was involved with all of them, because we don't want to leave any hanging for the police to possibly charge my brother, if that is indeed what happened. And so I think if you had that entire statement, you would agree that this construction...
Well, we're kind of getting, no offense to you, Mr. McDonald, but I think we're getting a feel here. Coercion's not the issue in this case. The issue is whether he invoked, and if he did that bar any further questioning?
Right. The words, can I have an attorney?
Let's assume for the moment
mm-hmm.
That the court was inclined to agree that that constituted an invocation. What's the effect, then, on statements made post-Miranda when he gets to the police station?
Are you saying that if the court construed, can I have an attorney, to be an absolute unequivocal invocation of the right
yes,
to counsel?
Sir. Yes, sir.
I think in that case, questioning would have to cease.
I got that.
But that is not...
Is that what happened?
That is not what happened. Because
I've been trying to get at.
Right. Because
what happened when the parties arrived at the police station? What was said at or about the time that the Miranda warnings were given, and if subsequent Miranda warnings are given, can there be a waiver, at least with respect to the statements given after the new Miranda warning?
I would have to say I don't know. But I don't think that the words, can I have an attorney, are unequivocal.
I understand that. I get that. I'm pretty sure that's your position, and I think we understand that position. To me, the other question that remains, though, is what is the effect on what appeared to me, at least, to be the more incriminating statements by the defendant, those that were made at the police station, following what I understood to be a new set of Miranda warnings.
Well, you do have recent United States Supreme Court decisions that say when, you know, a defendant invokes his right to silence under Miranda, and then I think it is 2 weeks later he's questioned again, that questioning can be resumed. And the statements that are admitted after an appropriate waiver, and, you know, the defendant in that case 2 weeks later did waive, I'm sorry, I don't have the case name on the top of my head, that the defendant did in fact waive, and that was an effective waiver, that those statements were properly admitted 2 weeks later.
And does it matter who initiates the subsequent conversation, assuming that we draw the dark line at he invoked and then they arrive, now we're on the other side of that dark line, we're at the police station. Does it matter who initiates subsequent conversations, the accused or the...
It matters in the sense that if the accused initiated the conversation, I think that's fine under longstanding Supreme Court jurisprudence. I think the new aspect of the law is that police initiated questioning after the elapse of 2 weeks or some amount of time. In this case, it was 2 weeks or longer or possibly shorter.
Let me change the facts a little bit. Let's say you have the same car ride and very little is elicited. It's like, what's your name? Where do you live? How old are you? Booking type information. And then the defendant says, I invoke my right to remain silent under the United States Constitution, so stop talking to me. I want a lawyer. Let's say he said that in the car. They continue motoring to the police station in silence. They get there. The police reread Miranda rights off their card, and the defendant, the conversation follows between him and the detective that we have, and the defendant goes ahead and talks to them. Would that be appropriate? Could we admit that statement?
Putting a finer point on Justice Hardesty's hypothetical, and I think the question there is the elapse of time.
So the recent case, there was a clear break, correct? I know what you're talking about. I don't have the name in mind either, but I think the break in time was significant to that decision.
There was a significant break in time. I think that if you have an absolute invocation such as the one that you proffered, I think that questioning must cease.
And could not, just on those facts, they get right down to the police station, re-Mirandize him, and he talks. Would you accept that we could?
Yes, if you were to conclude that can I have an attorney is an absolute unequivocal invocation of the right to counsel, yes.
So you would say that statement could not have come in had it been, I absolutely invoke my right to have a lawyer. Your point is then that you're back to square one, which is you think the invocation was ambiguous. And
the invocation was certainly ambiguous. She's proffered some case law pre-Davis, from the 1980s, and from federal district courts. There are just as many that say, can I have an attorney? Let's get my attorney down here, are equivocal invocations of counsel. I think for me what was important, and I think for the district court as well, is that there was an arguably equivocal statement made, can I have an attorney? And then the detective did what he should have done, what the Supreme Court in Davis said, this is what you should do, clarify. So nothing else happened, and the district court concluded nothing else happened in the interim. And then they got to the office, and he said, I just want to clarify in the car about this concern you had that you wanted an attorney. And he said, I want you to know that you have the right to the presence of attorney during this interview, that if you cannot afford an attorney, a court-appointed attorney will be provided to you. Do you understand that? Yes. Do you want to talk to me? Yes. Carter then says, so let me just clarify, if I later on I want an attorney or something like that, I can get one then, right? Detective says, that's right. Carter says, all right, cool. And then following that, we have 106 pages of statements.
But that's not what happened here. We've got the invocation in the car, and then we've got some conversation, and then we've got to where you're talking.
I think the sequence there is, in my understanding of the record, we have those preliminary questions, where do you live, who are you, what's your name, happened before Carter made his invocation.
Okay.
That's why the district court said, from the time that the detective said, you know, let's just talk about it at the office, until they got to the robbery division, there was nothing else. There was no conversation. There was no questioning. And that was
Except
the finding of the district court.
We're not clear on whether they referenced their interest in the brother during that same time span, right?
That is unclear.
So they could have said, who are you, et cetera, I want my lawyer. And then they could have said, you know, we're real interested in that brother. I wonder what's going on with this guy's brother. And then they get there, they re-Mirandize him, and he talks. I mean, that could be what
That is have. Reasonable speculation.
And it could go the other way. They could have talked about the brother earlier.
I don't think we know the answer to that question definitively.
But if there were absolute silence between the invocation and...
The district court basically found that there was absolute silence, that there was no further inquiry. That's the factual finding of the district court. I have 8 seconds.
You have a concluding thought, please?
The judgment of conviction should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. McDowell. Ms. Connolly.
Thank you. I think the court is aware of the pivotal issue in this case, what happened in the police car. And Your Honor was asking me, what does the case law talk about if he wants to re-invoke? And I would just cite the case of Smith versus Illinois. But that case indicates that responses to further questioning cannot be used to cast doubt upon an adequacy of an initial request. So the fact that there was further discussion and then he later, let's say that he did validly waive once they got to the police station, that is of no consequence as to whether or not he initially waived when he said, can I have a lawyer? And I would disagree with the state that that's ambiguous. Pursuant to federal case law, particularly, case law within the circuit in which this court falls within the Ninth Circuit, says, Smith versus Endall, can I talk to a lawyer? That is a case that predates Davis. However, Davis is really inapplicable unless the court finds that the statement was ambiguous. If the court finds that the statement is ambiguous, then Davis comes into play in regard to what is the standard. What Davis indicated was that if a defendant seeks to reinvoke or he wants to restore his constitutional right, the burden is upon the defendant at that point to unequivocally waive. However, if it's an initial waiver, then the burden is on the police. The burden is upon the state at that point in time to prove that it wasn't an invocation of the right to counsel. So Davis has been misconstrued in some courts because if it wasn't a reinvocation or a restoration of constitutional rights case, and there wasn't that discussion, Davis does say it is ambiguous that if it's ambiguous and he's reinvoking, the burden is on the defendant. If it's initial waiver, the burden is on the government to simplify it. I would submit that the discussion in the car was after he had waived his right to counsel because the detective indicated, when we got in the car, I Mirandized him and he said, can I have a lawyer? There was a subsequent drive and there was discussion. It's clear there was some discussion on the drive to the robbery office. The district court determined that was not interrogation. However, I would submit to you that under federal law, interrogation does not just mean, you know, question and answers. Interrogation can be statements, can be discussions, basically, that are designed to try and get the defendant to waive his rights to counsel. And I would submit that that's what happened in this case. And my client testified at the evidentiary hearing, and we heard testimony that the detective said, in fact, my client was forthright during his discussions with him. My client testified that the detective, after he waved, the detective said, you know, we're not going to know whether or not your brother's involved. And that is in the record. And the record, the detective did not deny that. And if you look at a voluntary statement of my client's, they talk about, oh, you wanted to clear up some things. And also what's inappropriate, when a suspect says, can I have a lawyer, the appropriate response should not be, we'll talk about that when we talk more about the crime when we get down to the robbery office. That is sending a message to my client that, you know what, I don't care if you want a lawyer. We're going to talk about this in further detail. The detective admits that in the voluntary statement. Right there in the voluntary statement, he indicates, You wanted to clear up matters. It was inappropriate for that discussion to take place. Just to summarize,
what do you do with the court's finding on page 51 of the transcript, where the court says, seems to be making the finding, can I have a lawyer? And then says he had had the Miranda warning before that. He actually inquired of it. And the officer said, we'll talk to you later about it. And no questioning in the interim was made, which I suggest makes it seem to be a finding of the court that you had the can I have a lawyer statement, then everybody in the car fell silent till they got to the station house. Would you agree that that's the finding that we should accept on this record?
No, I don't. I don't think it was clear. I think the only thing that's really clear about a factual determination that was made by the district court was a factual determination that what my client said was, can I have a lawyer? There was no findings of fact or conclusions of law prepared in this particular case.
So you would say that is not a finding that you
can see? I would say that is not a finding. I would say that the district court said there did not appear to be interrogation. However, I would submit that there was clearly some discussion, and under the federal law, if the discussion is designed to try and soften him up, to try and get him to
But is that your critical point? So if the reference to the brother predated the defendant's statement, can I have a lawyer? And then it all fell silent until they got to the station, would you agree with the state that the re-Mirandizing and the statement that followed would be appropriate?
Judge, can I have permission to answer your question? Have permission to answer
your
question?
I'm sorry to eat your time.
I would submit if he had silence, unless he reinitiated the questioning, after he said, can I have a lawyer, there can be no further questioning unless it's reinitiated by him. And
so you
no
would
evidence.
Deem the re-Mirandizing to be, in effect, further questioning, even under the scenario that there was no statements in the car until they got to the station house?
I think the evidence tends to indicate there was discussion. There was no, my reading of the record was that there was no substantive questioning regarding, let's talk about the facts and circumstances of this crime. My reading of the record was that the district court didn't find there was silence, that the district court found that there was no substantive questioning, no, what the court classified as interrogation. And I think interrogation can be broadly construed, and the court took it as meaning just questioning about the underlying facts of the case. I think it's clear from the record that there was a discussion in the car after he said, can I have an attorney, which resulted in him ultimately agreeing to waive his rights. And that is unauthorized under the federal constitution. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Connolly. Thank you, Mr. McDonald. This matter will be submitted. Court will be in recess.